I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/people today.
It's that time of the week again. The Rugby League rant, fifth and last. Put on your headgear, chuck in your mouthguard, and get ready for an hour of nothing of the NRL tour. Well, it certainly doesn't take long for things to turn in the NRL box head, and they certainly have after round three. Lots of chaos, plenty of injuries, an upset or two, a couple of blowouts, and no doubt a lot of talk since last week, in particular around the 18th man and what's occurred from the weekend.
Funny how a lot of people, I think, were sort of referring to the conversations that we had. I know on social media it went a little bit nuts on Saturday in particular, because we had the two games which were highly impacted by concussions. So there are a lot of people not giving us a rap, but just sort of saying that we covered it on last week's show, and my tune on it hasn't really changed. Like, the talk now is that they're going to bring it in if you've got three HIAs. I just think you're really confusing
I think you'd agree, and I don't want to interrupt you here, but they're all making way too big a deal and complicated than what it needs to be. How we explain it, how the rule is all throughout those junior grades already, I don't think you could simplify it anymore. There's no benefit, plain and simple, if you lose a half, a forward, or anyone, because there's a minimum stand down period. People are saying, well, how could you do that? Well, with the way concussion's going in this day and age, and a lot of the journos use this week player welfare as a buzzword, and things going too far, well, you can't go too far with player welfare, and in particular with concussions, because as much as we've learnt in the recent time, as compared to what we know, there's still a lot we don't know. But plain and simple, if you fail your HIA, and you have to fail your HIA, there's no advantage gained. The bloke's ruled out for a minimum period. And reading the protocols of what we used to have to go through, I checked to see what it was. It says 14 days, and there was a protocol for it.
Yeah.
And there's a way to get back in 11 or so days, but there's a couple of days non-contact, there's a bunch of testing and steps they have to go through. And you can't just go to any doctor or a club doctor or what, it has to be an actual concussion specialist. So for the most part, it's an independent doctor and it's a neurosurgeon. So clubs aren't going to be forking out a bill every single time to get you cleared every week to go to a neurosurgeon. But if you legitimately fail a HIA and you have to go through that minimum process and potentially miss a week each time, I don't see where, as we said, if that's the way it's used as it is in the lower grades, where the advantage is. And this supposed rotting and carry on and all the scenarios that people have drawn up. If you look at the simple way it's been used from cup down, I think it's pretty straightforward as to how it works. There's no advantage gain. If it's your gun half...
Yeah, I've moved a little bit on it. Like, I listened to what Paul Ken had to say on the first hour of the Sunday sin bin, and some of the things that he said sort of made sense and made his argument a little bit more clear. But I just don't like how we've now moved across to having had failed three concussions. So I don't know. I just don't see how, if you legitimately knocked out, there's a minimum standout period for the player who fails a HIA. You have to obviously fail your HIA. And the HIA process has been taken advantage of anyway. So, you know, if you look at some of the timings around when middle forwards have HIAs, it leaves things a little bit murky.
That's my point in this scenario.
I thought I explained it pretty well last week. Like, I don't see the advantage. Like, I know that the argument is that if you carry a middle forward there, and then, you know, at the back end of a game, you get a fresh body coming onto the field if you roared it. Per se, and that would be an issue. But you have to have a big enough deterrent in the stand down and the process around it. You're never going to make it watertight.
They're not allowed to come back. But
there should just be, you know, the 10-day stand down or whatever it is to make it 2 weeks, or at least a one-game stand down, regardless of whether you've got a, you know, 7, 8, 9-day turnaround. It shouldn't matter. And then you'll hopefully deter clubs from abusing it.
Well, the only case I think this year in the lower grades before this scenario happened, I think, was Jackson Paulo.
We haven't had one.
He got KO'd or concussed, I didn't see it personally, in South's first New South Wales Cup game.
Yeah.
And had to go through the protocol. Clearly, they've got him back within a week because then he suddenly played NRL. Then he got a head knock again and then he missed this week. So I don't know what the standard is, but reading the New South Wales Rugby League website where these rules are implemented right now for concussions and HIAs, etc., and the minimum stand down period, they had different rules for 18 and under and adults and older. So possibly for a more fully developed brain or a 19-year-old onwards, they're saying there's potential to be cleared earlier, but there's still a return to play process. It's not something you just go, yep, I'm knocked out, I failed my HIA, I'm off, we get a fresh player into the mix. It's not that simple.
Yeah.
And I thought a lot of long bows were drawn, but to me now, after what's happened on the weekend, to bring out the way they've done and make it out that you need 3 HIAs, and the second part was talking that potentially the replacement that would be brought on the bench would only be a development player, so I'm assuming that means someone from outside the top 30. What's the point?
Yeah.
That's a player you wouldn't use anyway, realistically, until later in the year. The development players for a reason. So I don't understand. You're unlikely to ever get near that scenario. And number two, a development player of all people, not some of your top 30, similar to what we talked about last week in the sense of your 18th man generally or your 19th, 20, 21st, that number for a reason.
Yeah.
Because they're not in your best 7-8.
Correct, yeah.
On an occasional week, you might have someone come back from injury and they put them there and they name them late because during the week, they might have to go through some tests to even make sure they're ready to rock and roll. But I just didn't buy into the methodology of, oh, they'll stash a forward and fail and this, that, and the other. Like, the process that we're talking about that is used in the lower grades has pretty clear deterrents as to why you wouldn't do any of what they were saying if you followed similar guidelines. That was more the point we were making last week, but they weren't even aware of that process clearly and how it works.
Yeah.
So as a result of what's happened on the weekend of those games, and I should mention, this is the start of our set of 6. Tackle One was talking about revisiting the 18th man situation. They've drawn even more long bows saying, well, we don't want it for injuries and foul play and this, that, now that happens. Like, for me, we've talked about this one before as well. For foul play, I think that's another one where it should be brought into it. If you KO somebody, like they've claimed that Kafusi was foul play the other week, or Dallin knocking out Cleary and you go to the bin and he gets to come back on, like, you've lost a player due to foul play. Injuries, natural attrition, all the stuff they've carried on about and speeding up the game, all for it. That's fine. Injuries are a part of the game. Accidents are a part of the game. The Ryan James, Sebastian Chris head clash was an accident, but same deal. 2 HIAs, but if they would have, you know, not had to pine and that last player got injured or concussed, and you say only 2 of my HIAs, you don't deserve a person on the bench, I think we're just taking away from the game. To say it's better to watch Cronulla play that second half and, oh, how gutsy, like, I don't care if they were gutsy. They didn't stand a fucking chance.
Mm.
The contest was ruined. But there were 3 legitimate HIAs. Wade Graham copped the head knock. Nakora's head knock was bad enough, and then Will Kennedy couldn't come back on half time. Tell me what advantage they gained from bringing one person onto the field if you have the scenario we're talking about now. There's no advantage at all. You've lost both your edge back rows, a representative player, a Kiwi international, and a fullback. Yeah. And you've had to run all your middles ragged, and then you open up again. We talk about welfare. Forget just the head knocks. There's guys every week that generally play with injuries, play under fatigue. We're putting some middles and some guys into a zone they shouldn't be into because they're not fit enough to play at that game. They're running at a disadvantage, and they might have had 2 or 3 others out there that have a knock or a niggle that you can't tend to or can't do anything about because you're also forcing them to play.
Yeah.
Look, so I think we're getting into another layer of player welfare.
We are, but I think it's time for us to sort of move off it, because I think everyone that listens
to
the show consistently knows where we sit on it. We'll have more to say once the game comes down with an actual rule, if they do or they don't.
Well, given we'll the guidelines of what they've got today, I think what they're supposedly bringing in is pointless.
Yeah, well, I'll wait and I'll have a look at it closely when it comes down as rock solid.
Yeah, but before we move on, I guess the simplicity of what we explained last week compared to what was unknown and what people were carrying on about, I don't really see, like we said, how you could rule the way the rule is in that sense. If there's the return to play protocol it's minimum 7 days, so you have to miss a week, etc.
It could be rorted, but you'd want to make sure that the player who you're going to yank off is someone that you're not going to need, or you wouldn't want to be doing it in a, you know, a grand final week or whatever. Like,
but this is the other thing where people panic and go, oh, well, you know, if it happened in that time, they wouldn't want to get them off. I'm like, well, they've got the review now anyway where they bring players off. If you legitimately fail in a final or you fail during a competition game, and we saw it last year with Boyd Cordner, it ruled him out of Origin.
Yeah.
I know he's had multiple head knocks, but people are like, they'd never do that for a final or an Origin. Well, they did. He copped the head knock 5 or 10 minutes into the New South Wales series and didn't play again. That was the end of it. So I know he's got a history of it, but you can't tell me it's not that hasn't happened. It did happen. So
yeah,
and again, all roads lead back to, I know a lot of people complain about, but player welfare, and especially in that area. So we'll see what comes out of it. But I still think the way they do it in the lower grades, obviously coming up with some sort of minimum stand down, so it is a week. Goes through the protocols, return to play is enough of a deterrent, especially as we've seen in weeks previous. Say if Adam Reynolds went down last week, if you told Souths, or if he laid down to try and get a penalty, went off and ended up failing that, whether it was head knock, not a head knock, and they missed him for a week, there's certainly no advantage there to bring an extra player in for someone like Adam Reynolds.
Mm.
Or vice versa, like we've just said, during a finals game, if you think someone would fly close enough to the wind, if it was a minimum week stand down, to get an extra player on the field who wasn't even your best 17 to start with, I just don't see it.
No.
I really don't see it. But, yeah, there's been plenty of talk about injuries and extras, and I think it's developed a lot further than what we were going on about last week. We were talking purely for the head knock situation, not for injury, not for foul play, not 19th, 20th, and all these other things that have been rolled through it, but we'll wait and see what pans out when the rule is officially named. It was apparently getting done tonight, I think.
Buzz was saying, there's going to be a meeting on Tuesday, and apparently it's going to be in for round 5. How the situation works is most likely that it's going to take 3 HIAs, which the one on the weekend of the Sharks game was apparently the first one in however God knows how many years to have 3 HIAs. So it's basically never going to happen, mate. Yeah, so the rule would be pointless.
Yeah, it would be.
So there you go. Tackle 2. Injury carnage from the weekend. Speaking of player welfare and the game and everything, do you think a lot of what happened on the weekend is a knock-on effect, and some people are saying we've had too small a sample size of rule changes? I look at it in a sense of saying, well, maybe...
No one knows.
Maybe we've had extra rule changes this year, but we still have come from a pre-season into a stoppage, a second mini pre-season, rule changes, into a season, short turnaround from Origin into some teams like Melbourne, who only had a month basically of training, into another new season, and we've added more rules again. I'm not saying it's because of the rules, but like some of the head knocks, as we said, friendly fire, accidents, some's just poor technique. Your things like your Luke Keary's non-contact injuries, you can't plan for those.
Mm.
We've just seen people have those in the past, but it certainly was one hell of a round in that term. Like to watch the Sharks game, as we said, 3 HIAs, Mitchell Moses gets KO'd as well. The injury madness you have there. You've got the Raiders game, 2 HIAs, ankle injury. You got Ben Hunt, who at some stage obviously thought he had a cork in his leg. Turns out he's got a busted leg. And there was multiple others across the weekend in all games. The injury toll was huge. Tom Eisenhuth, broken ribs, Dylan Edwards, broken hand. They're just results of rugby league. But I can't remember this much carnage within a round in a long period of time. And last week we had some big injuries as well, with Chanel, Tabita Harris, and some other players obviously getting injured long term.
Yeah, whole stack. You'd have to go through and look at how many were, you know, I guess, impact injuries or twists. I find this one really, really difficult. I don't know. I think it's a mixture of everything. I think it's a mixture of last year, longer season, shorter pre-season. I think little's been said about the lack of trials. We're essentially still in a trial period.
Yeah, technically.
Physiological adaptation usually takes about 4 to 6 weeks to happen. We're not past that point now. You can rep it as much as you want in training, but guys aren't belting the shit out of each other like they are in a game.
No.
You can replicate game intensity in terms of, you know, getting your heart rate up, yeah, and the meters and all that sort of stuff.
All that kind of stuff.
You can't rep the contact.
No, not to the same and the intensity.
Physical aspect. Like our game on the weekend, we played Hills on Sunday, and you know, they've got 3 or 4 NRL blokes there in their side, and the ball was in play, I reckon, for the first 14 minutes. And David Gower, who's an ex-NRL, played NRL last year. He was off after 13 minutes. So I don't think it's... I really don't know. I don't think the rules have got a lot to do with it. I think the rules are impacting everyone, every position. And it's going to have, you know, an equal effect across all teams. You could then... You'd have to look at... For the injuries that you think are soft tissue and maybe caused by overuse and or
fatigue,
you'd have to then look at weights programs, training, surfaces. You know, I sort of started to think maybe it's because they were all playing on wet tracks last week and now they're dry now. Or it's just, it is what it is. Like, there's injuries.
Hmm.
We always have a round or two like this every year, even before the rules were changed, where we just have a heap of injuries. Yeah, with more fatigue, you get poorer technique.
Yeah, more the body's, incidents.
The body's obviously weaker. It's not as strong.
You get yourself in a bad situation. I think a lot of the extra...
I think a lot's been made of technique. You can talk about fatigue as much as you want for the defender, but the more often than not, the attacker is under as much fatigue as well. So the impact isn't, you know, as strong. I don't know. Like, I certainly haven't noticed in our Cup and Ron Massey games more injuries. I think actually it's probably the opposite, probably less injuries. You know, we've probably had, you know, more rolled ankles and twisted knees and things like that just through poor functional movement and poor balance and poor footwork, just your fundamental stuff that goes when you're under fatigue.
But not long-term goes.
Not long-term impact injuries like we've had previously, you know, like we were getting all the pecs and the shoulders. And
I think you lose a bit more of that.
When's the last time we had a pec?
Well, I think, again, we lose a bit of that with the way the game's going. That's my point.
Would you rather have the pec, which is a year, or would you rather have...
When you have, you know, seven or eight...
Smaller injuries.
Yeah, when you have seven or eight concussions like we did on the weekend, though, a lot of those, I think, were under fatigue or poor decisions or...
No doubt they were.
...incidents. So, like, you know, the James and Chris ones, obviously an accident. Jared coming in and... KOing.
His were just lazy.
That one I found hard though, because the angle, they didn't want to show the replay of it, but from the initial replay, I was trying to see if he got him. The second angle they showed, I thought Burgess might have got
him. I think it was Burgess.
I couldn't tell.
I watched it today.
The second one, I looked at the front on sort of shot and I go, I think it's Burgess that he's copped, not Jared. They're all saying it was a glancing blow, but the way he hit the deck. It was a hell of a round in that regard. I guess the main thing, and same deal, I'm not going to draw a bow to it just yet, but a lot of people have. We won't know till the end of this year, but you're going to get a full sample size, because not only, like we said, shorter preseason, shorter turnaround, more rules added on, there's more games. We're back to the full 24 rounds. We've got the origin period in there as well, and heading into the final series. So if we're going to get a true sample, I think we do need to play the long game and see how it pans out. But if things continue along the same trajectory and there's more injuries under fatigue due to poor technique and poor decisions and soft tissue injuries, etc., well, then maybe there's something they have to look at. At the end of the year, if it continues to trend that way. But it was certainly a hefty toll, and for some clubs more than others. But tackle three, moving on, the Cowboys situation. It's been two sort of very different weeks in regards to reactions from Todd Payton and what he's looking to get out of his side. First, we had the, you know, maybe have a chat to the star and come out and single him out and try and set a standard in culture and forge a stake into the ground. And then the situation where he made it a little bit about himself, which probably didn't buy him too many favours. The response the week after wasn't exactly the greatest. Goes back, has a hard jab again, looking for a response week three. One of their worst losses in a decade. Absolutely destroyed at home, in front of their fans. Not many people, I would say, looked like they were putting in an effort or playing to the best of their ability. Murmurs already about players not happy about where they are. I've already... without naming names, know of a player manager that went up there to talk to a few of his players who are obviously having issues already. We know the home situation is one in particular. There's been one that's been made about. Morgan now thrown on top of that. Obviously, last few years we've been talking about how bad he's been injured, but now they're talking that behind the scenes potentially needs to be medically retired. And then today they've come out and categorically basically denied that he's going to be ready to go in a week, but then there's still people saying, well, that's not the case. They're trying to find out behind the scenes, first of all, without really talking to Morgan, what the situation is and then how they're going to approach it, which doesn't seem right to me if that's the way you're going to go about your business. But I wouldn't have thought within 3 weeks we'd have this situation escalate so quickly for the Cowboys.
No. No, you know my thoughts on it. I had concerns, you know, sort of going back to what was said after round one. I'm not going to rehash things that I've already said on the podcast, but there are some cracks beginning to appear. Their performance the other night, I think, that one was definitely the worst of the year so far. And there were just some things defensively which concerned me, like effort areas, the body language, the chat now coming out of the Cowboys.
Yeah, it's never
starting to talk about contract lengths and player managers and all that sort of stuff. I still think this is recoverable for Peyton, but he's going to have to work pretty hard on it in the next 2 weeks. I think they've got the Bulldogs in 3 weeks in round six, so that's obviously a game where they'd be favoured to win, but I think they've got the Sharks this week, and then I'm not sure who they've got in the middle, but they're not in an easy run of games, but they've just got to find a way to win one. I think all this chatter will go away when they win a game. The fact that they've lost three in a row and they're getting belted, new coach, there's a lot of chat, it just makes things really, really difficult. So
I think this also points to something.
They play West Tigers next week at Leichhardt on a Sunday arvo. Good luck there.
They've got a horrible record at Leichhardt too.
Then they play the Dogs.
I'll throw this side up
Dogs
as well.
At home.
They've had three bad years leading into this. So I
Raiders.
Think it also all points to, it's not just a player in terms of they might have a player a issue with the coach. There's clearly an issue within the group and some of the players and their effort and what they're doing.
Josh McRae said that.
You can't miss the finals.
I feel
3 years
sorry
in a row
for
after making a grand final.
I feel sorry for Todd Payton in the way that they're playing, because there's just been no change. And it shows you that you can have Paul Green's approach and Todd Payton's approach and still come up with the same result. And this is probably a good message for the game and administrators game wide, that it's not the coach. I know the coach is the easiest, I guess, piece on the chessboard to move, but a lot of the time it's something deeper than that. I understand, like, coaches are like pawns. You can just sort of move them up
and replace them, so
it's a developing issue, I think, in North Queensland. I don't have an inside word at all. You can only go off what I've said in the last 2 weeks. I didn't like his body language in the dressing room. I didn't like how he spoke to the media.
No.
And sort of made it a little bit about himself. And I don't take back anything I said. I still believe it was selfish. And maybe that's got some players offside, but that's all off the field stuff. They need to play better on the field.
Oh,
and I don't blame Peyton for what's going on the field. I blame that on, you know, that responsibility's got to fall on the players. So play better.
And I'm with you on that side of things. But yeah, I'm not going to name the person, but I know the person who's close to the situation used to be at the club, who still knows people within the club. But it's never good when you hear that sort of stuff. Mm-hmm. And on the flip side of that, media side, not from my side and stuff that I'd heard, but obviously there's plenty coming out of the joint now today that they reckon Clifford attempted a backflip on his Newcastle deal, but we've already got the new setup where it's a 10-day period of cooling off, so that's well and truly gone, unless Newcastle are happy to not backflip on that deal.
He just got dropped.
Yeah, well, he's just got dropped, I know. So I don't know how that works out. Is that a thing where he's starting to think, well, maybe I want to stay here, even though he's got punted? Is he getting cold feet about the move? Is the Morgan situation or what's preempted around that changing? I don't know, but I just found that strange today. They've also all drawn a long bow to his connection to the under-20s players, Moses and Brooks, that he had years ago, and them being potentially available at some point. I think that's drawing a long bow. Probably the only thing that was real solid mail, I think, was today that potentially Cowboys officials were heading into Sydney tonight or tomorrow to try and meet up with Adam Reynolds, because that situation at South isn't getting any better.
Mm.
And with the Morgan situation escalating, or what they're trying to do about the scenes and what they're saying on the surface,
would you want to go to?
Seems different. They're clearly interested, if that's going to be the case, in trying to get a number 7 to go out there. Whether Reynolds would go, I don't know. We're going to see here. This is really going to stoke South in action, I guess, if someone comes to the table. But if you're Adam Reynolds, is that where you want to go?
Not really.
If they give you the 3 or 4 years you're after in a good pay packet, if that's what it's about, I guess you'd potentially make the move. But for a guy who's growing up in Redfern, around that club, like I said, I don't know if they can get past the stalemate they're at, or if this Stoke Souths or his form, or if they're just not going to budge on it at all for salary cap wise, I don't know. But there seems to have been no movement. They were talking that they'd potentially get it to a 2-year deal, a little bit less money, and be able to get the goalpost moved, but apparently they're sticking solid more on what they said about John Sutton, that it was good enough for him to go year by year at the back end of money wise, so that's what they want to stick to. So interesting, but what happened at the Cowboys, so keep our eyes on how they play this week against the Sharks and how things escalate over the next couple of weeks. Tackle four. The COVID situation, unfortunately, has reared its head. We've had some cases in Queensland in the last few days. That's escalated a little bit, and it's got to the situation where the Brisbane Broncos have been relocated to Sydney for now until April 8th minimum. The situation now with tracing they've done has got to the point where the Gold Coast Titans are likely to be relocated as well. If that is to be the case, their next two games were supposed to be, I'm pretty sure, on the Gold Coast. So they'd obviously be down here in Sydney. The Broncos, even this week, due to the tracing and what's going on, and given Melbourne and their government, I think they're still waiting to see whether they can get into Melbourne to play the Storm. If not the Storm, we're going to have to relocate their home game to Sydney. So if you're Melbourne after you've missed all of last year, you'd be pretty filthy. But I guess if you have to do it for a week, you have to do it for a week. If you're Brisbane or the Titans, and I guess they can't complain about being moved potentially for 2 weeks because the Warriors spent the whole year here last year. So that's right. I don't think anyone can really complain. I'm not going to compare Melbourne's situation because they weren't in a completely different country, but they were relocated for the whole year and never got to play home games. So yeah. I'm sure they want to play all their home games, but one's not going to be a lot of skin off their nose. But as far as the Brisbane and the Titans situation is concerned, if it's for the safety and well-being of the players, the competition and everything moving forward, I highly doubt there's going to be any complaints after what the Warriors endured last year and are enduring again this season right now.
We know it's going to be short-term anyway. So
exactly. If they get on top of things, they're doing a snap lockdown for 3 days now. If it does outbreak a little bit more, obviously it might expand, might roll some rules back, might take a couple of weeks. We don't know. But we know that we're much better in terms of getting on top of things and cutting the head off the snake than what we were 12 months ago. Yep. I think the main worry that we have right now is that the New South Wales government's bracing for some cases or potential little pop-ups as a result of it taking a week or so for these, you know, cases to emerge in Queensland before they were found out about, and people that have been to Byron here, there and everywhere. So it's going to probably be a couple of weeks before we really find out the total effect. I'm not saying we're heading to a breakdown in a full bubble situation like we had, but there may be a few weeks here
short term
where the players are tightened up for a few weeks to a month pending the outcome of tracing and how long it's going to take to get this situation under control.
Yeah,
but for now, Brisbane and most likely the Titans were looking like they're going to be playing minimum out of Sydney, and potentially Brisbane this week might have Melbourne coming to them to play in Sydney, which I'm sure they'd rather play them on a neutral venue regardless. You're playing Melbourne, but their record and their record against Melbourne and Amy Park in general is not great. So, yeah, fingers crossed things don't get anywhere.
They can play them on an asphalt road at the moment. I don't think it'd matter.
Well, fingers crossed, like we said, this doesn't escalate to a point where we're talking bubbles, lockdowns, all sorts of things, crowd restrictions. That's not what we're looking for, let's put it that way. Tackle five, the Roosters and the carnage that happened to their season. They already even went into that game after the two big wins, still with guys on the road to recovery. Guys coming back from major surgery. Cordner, who's missing for half the year. Friend, who's supposedly was supposed to see a specialist, even discuss his future, who they said the doctor was going to see had a heart attack, for Christ's sake. That's not exactly great. Bradley missed another week off the ACL. Verrills was a few weeks away. Billy Smith, shoulder surgery. Adam Kieran's dislocated wrist. And then you go into the game looking forward to that head-to-head clash, which is such a really, really pivotal clash and one of the best ones you get to see all year between Souths and the Roosters. And your halfback and leader in Luke Keary, non-contact ACL, and then Lachlan Lamb with a bit of a twist when his leg got stuck in the ground, looking at potentially 6 weeks, and all of a sudden you've got no halves and Lindsay Collins knocked out cold. Your forward pack got dominated.
The game was well before that all happened, but the long-term effects are going to be significant. You've now got an 18-year-old steering you around. They were manhandled in that game. They've got some big issues, the Roosters.
Dominated.
Big issues. And it's concerning. Long-term injuries and a grouping of them at the same time.
Well, you've got 8 or 9 people unavailable right now.
Makes it difficult to manage. You know, the nine issue, that nine was their big issue on the weekend. No, early doors prior to the injuries, that they just, the service out of there just wasn't good enough.
Mm.
Particularly when Drew Hutchison was in there, it was diabolical.
Lost his head, he got ill discipline.
Yeah.
In the second half, you had Jared, who was back to Jared of a couple of years ago before Robinson, where you thought he might have been on the way out.
Jared.
Starting to getting a bit wild again. Bit of a law unto himself.
Belting people in the head.
Getting penalised constantly, not really making a great impact on the game. And probably the sadder part, I thought Collins 12, 18 months ago was a developing prop. Up until the point he got knocked out, was their most effective forward the other night. We're talking Tokiaho, we're got Hargraves, Liu. That's a big turnaround for a massive pack that we're looking at generally as one of the premier packs in the competition. It's crazy to think. Mm. I guess the big question is, a lot of people already drawing bows saying, well, they can't win the comp. They can't make the top four. Some have gone as far to say they won't make the eight. I'm going to go to this situation and say, look, Kiri's huge. Losing Lamb, who's developing, definitely hurts. But the quality they've got there, they're going to get a couple of bodies back unless they get long-term injuries to three or four of the guys coming back to really affect their side. I still think they're better than half the competition.
Yeah.
I think they're going to struggle to win the competition, most definitely.
Mm.
But as far as, you know, the teams they've already lapped in your Manly's, your Tigers, the potential to play the Bulldogs, the Broncos, etc. I don't think there's any way they miss the eight. I think they make the eight. But to say that if they were a threat, or as I said, they weren't really spoken about, come to the season the last 2 weeks after those two games they had with the players they had still missing, I think losing Kiri is a huge step backwards. And it's not very often you win competitions with 18-year-old halfbacks, even if that included having Tedesco still at fullback, a more settled nine position, and six settled with the forward pack stepping up the back line, etc. I think, yeah. Still think they're probably, you know, five, six, seven, somewhere around there.
Yeah, I tend to agree. It's not so much that they're weaker, it's more who's going past them.
It's more you're looking at them now going,
because
well,
because we've spoken about the huge difference in the depth in the competition. They call in Sam Walker and Joseph Swale, so, probably the two best young players in the game at the moment.
It's obviously going to accelerate.
That haven't played in the NRL.
Yeah. I think it's obviously going to accelerate their situation. I haven't looked at the team list yet, but we spoke about it the other night.
Yeah, but they're going into a situation where they've got basically an international side around them. So
yeah.
And it's a good situation to walk into.
Sat there this week thinking, when people go, well, what were the moves you'd make? I think we've seen the last few weeks, and I've talked about it, the catch pass and the ball handling of Manu with the outside backs they've got.
I hate that move. I hate Manu to six.
You do?
Oh yeah,
who would you put to six?
You just play. I'd play Hutchison there. I'd just play someone there who's serviceable. I don't like it.
Don't like Manu getting more football.
No, I think you play a half. You need a half there. What have they done? What are they named?
Well, I don't know, but I just kind of thought in my head from what I see of Hutchison.
Have a look.
I like the idea of.
I don't know either. I haven't
getting Sawali into your back line or Ikavalu and getting him in and.
It's a Sunday night game.
Looking at the lineups we've got here, what they have named. Tedesco is in the one. Tupou, Brett Morrison on the wings. Josh Morris, Joseph Manu in the centres. Hutchison, Walker.
Particularly if you're going to have Walker come in. You can't stick Manu next to him and then expect Walker to do all the organising, kicking, the whole lot. I just don't think it's fair.
Hmm.
That's not to say that Hutchison, just because he's named there, doesn't mean he's going to play there.
Yeah. And they've got Liu in the front row.
I'd sooner play Victor Radley at six. Than I would.
Well, he plays that link role and can do a little bit. I don't think he's got much of a kicking game, but I think he'd help out with the ball playing side of things. But Liu is now in the front row with Collins knocked out, Tokiaho, Lussick still the nine, Crichton, Tupanua, Radley's named at
third. Who are they named on? Yeah, there you go. Ben Marsh is in.
And you've got Ikavalu on the bench. So you might see a late reshuffle. Rhea Hargraves, Butcher, Fletcher Baker, and in the extended bench, Egan Butcher, Sawali, Ben Marski, who I think they would have had to get an exemption because he's not part of their top squad or their development players, and they've called in one of their development players, which they obviously had to get an exemption to do, which is Tukapua Hautapua, who is one of the young Jersey flag players who we talked about in the preseason. Him and Nahafu White were two guys in their development squad that have come through the 18s and flag systems and been very successful. But if you've got eight guys already unavailable and you've only got 28 on the books, you're going to have to find an exemption. And looking at the squad, I said it to you the other week, you played Hills on the weekend, who had a lot of guys not in their team. Round one in the Ron Massey thing, they had about six or seven guys who played an NRL trial the other week against the Tigers. Josh Ralph, Josh Bergerman, who's played a lot of Cop, Tommy Carr, who's played a lot of Cup as well, the Marski twins, who were originally at the Roosters with Radley, Manu, all those guys when they beat the Panthers, who have then spent time in New South Wales Cup at the Bulldogs and now, obviously, pre-season trialing in that Hills system that's linked to it again. Yeah. I don't know what he'll go with full time. I'm surprised he's got Ikavalu there, which makes me think there's the possibility of a late reshuffle. But I'm also looking at the Lussick side of things, thinking, well, I still want cover for him. Because I don't really want to have to play him for 80 minutes. And they're going to come up against a decent forward pack in the Warriors. Is there potential if they roll Ikavalu in, push Manu into the halves and had Lussick out of the side altogether that Nat Butcher could play some dummy half and have a bit of utility value? I don't know if it's for 20 minutes.
There's a lot to work out.
There's a couple. One thing you do know, they've got a lot of guys with skill. Or they could push Radley into that role, put Butcher at nine. There's a few ways you could go about it. But my original thought the other night was the potential for Suwali to come in and either play wing or centre, push Manu in, have that sort of reshuffle and walk. But I thought exactly what you did. I'm assuming if he could, he may avoid that altogether, even if he did push Manu in with Hutchinson and put another outside back in. If he pushed Morris to the centre, which he did last year for a couple of games, more so than the wing, and had Ikavalu on the wing to avoid having to blood those two guys straight away. But clearly, the way they're heading, and I think you'd probably agree as a coach, you know Walker's on the radar somewhere in the future. You've accelerated that. You've got good players around him. You know Kiri's gone for the year now. You might as well bite the bullet with him.
Definitely.
The Suwali situation, you might be able to wait a week or two because you've got the back line.
I'd put them both.
But if not right now, if you think, all right, fuck it, let's bite the bullet, I'd be finding a way to play both of them right now. But the question is, wing, centre?
I'd throw Suwali in as 14. We've got Ikavalu there. I'd rather Suwali in that spot. And then just go, right, if the game opens up, I'll put him on. But if the game doesn't open up, then, you know, he sits.
Yeah, and we're obviously, like I said, see how this all pans out. They've got a couple of guys. Vero's be back in a few weeks. Radley's back on board. The friend thing's still got to wait to play out, and people have already started throwing out players that they might be able to bring back. Maloney, who's basically ruled that out today, get Widdop, Austin, Jackson Hastings, what will they potentially do? I don't think they're going to rush to find somebody straight away. I think they're going to stick with what they've got. They've got two guys, two spots, I'm pretty sure, left in their squad. They've got four development players, two of them are forwards, two are fullback centre wingers in the Taufa Graham twins. And obviously, yeah, they've got the Suwali situation and Walker. I don't think they're going to pull the trigger straight away. They're going to wait and see how things
pan out. The Taufa Graham boys are still playing flag, though, aren't they?
I think now they're in flag.
Mm. I'll be pushing them into cup.
I think they're not going
to
be rushing.
They might have to now.
And even as a nominal value as far as contract, if they waited it further in the year, you better pay less. Or someone else might come on the radar. If Kieran gets healthy, it might be another option. He's naturally half with Walker.
Yeah.
If they don't want to go with Hutchison and you've got someone else out, Lamb would be 4 to 6 weeks. There's a lot of things to play out, but very interesting times. They've accelerated the development, obviously, and we're both of the opinion that we still think they're going to be in the eight. I don't know if they'll be in the top four now, but I still think who under them is better, even if you take those guys out. I still think
the Bears have got the bye this week, so
perfect timing.
New South Wales Cup, it is good timing.
They get to bring him straight up.
Mm.
Interesting how things play out, but yeah, I found it interesting that some people were willing to say they wouldn't make the eight. I think there's still way too much quality in their team to say that they're going to miss out suddenly because they lost Kiri and Lamb. I think they're still a lot better squad-wise than half the competition.
Yeah.
So I wouldn't be ruling them out there. Last one. Well, I had two things here. We'll quickly talk about both of them. Tackle six. The Origin eligibility thing. I don't even want to give this whole lot of air, but what a joke. That's my opinion.
What is?
Well, they're saying that Taumalolo's interested now in playing Origin and Paul Green's there and contact. Like, Mal Meninga's come out to poo-poo it and say, you know, it's wrong. But I also thought, I'm pretty sure in the same breath, before he ever played for New Zealand, that Mal Meninga tried to get him to play for Queensland.
Mm.
And he chose to play for New Zealand, which I can understand now why he's saying no. But at the time, you're also trying to get him to play for Queensland back in the day. But at the same time, you've already played for a Tier 1 nation in New Zealand, which is not obviously showing your intent to play for Australia, which Origin's supposed to be linked to. If you play Origin, you play for Australia.
Yeah.
And now you've played for Tonga. And had a massive win against the Kangaroos and took a step forward for the international game. So I think it would just be shitting on the Origin concept to let someone who's now played for a different Tier 1 nation, Tonga, who's now beat the Kangaroos, and now suddenly go, oh yeah, you can play for Queensland.
Hmm.
And people have thrown up ratings, especially a couple of the journos, like, for fuck's sake, we're that desperate in that side of things that if the ratings have dropped a little bit, that we think turning it to an all-star concept is going to suddenly save Origin. Like, people didn't buy into the all-star concept after a year or two because half the clubs were pulling their players out and guys weren't playing it and there wasn't an attachment to it. Origin's got an attachment to it because we're from New South Wales or they're from Queensland and players are attached to those jerseys. It shouldn't be treated as a way to go, oh yeah, I reckon I could play Origin or I want to play Origin.
Mm.
Like, you either are New South Wales, Welshman or Queensland, or you're not.
Yeah.
You either are going to play for Australia, or that's your tier, which is a stepping stone to that, or a linked pathway to that, or you're not. And the fact there's even talk around eligibility being revisited again, how this whole situation works to me, is a complete farce and joke, and it shouldn't even be considered.
Yeah, totally agree.
And I know people are going to go, oh, well, there's been other cases where...
It's absolute bullshit.
But yeah, he linked his allegiance to here. He obviously ticked the box at the time. Doesn't mean I agree with it, but he hadn't played for another Tier 1 nation. You can't play for New Zealand or someone, in my opinion, another Tier 1 nation, then suddenly be playing Origin.
Yeah.
You're either aligned to Australia and you're eligible for Origin for World Cups and other situations. I've got no problem with players with other heritage playing for Tier 2 nations. Otherwise, what would the World Cup be? Half the Samoa and Tonga teams wouldn't be eligible if we didn't let them play for World Cups. For that situation, it's fine. But in the out and out all of it, if your Tier 1 nation is not Australia, you don't play Origin. If you don't qualify for that way, or if you've already played for another Tier 1 nation, there's no going back on that.
Yeah.
You are not eligible to play State of Origin.
Yeah.
And the last one, quickly, I'll link to that, was the referees on the weekend.
Diabolical.
Some people weren't happy with some calls in some games, more particularly plenty of Raiders fans, I'm sure, were upset about the forward pass. I didn't get to see that one at work, but...
It was awful.
I read enough, and then I heard from you, then I've heard a lot of people, and then Ennersley, obviously, admitting in his press conference, there was a 40-20 that was... iffy at a critical stage in the back of the Newcastle Tigers game. Not going to take anything away from the Tigers because Newcastle are absolutely awful, but still, they're things that shouldn't be getting missed. And we've got the bunker. You still kind of wonder again why these things don't get picked up. Yeah. And Ricky Stewart and his whole reaction to the situation, you think he handled it well?
I loved it.
You loved it?
Yeah, I loved it. Because he got to basically say what he wanted to say without getting fined and without answering questions. I thought it was genius.
Ricky,
like, it's the first time I'd ever described something that Ricky Stewart's done post game when he's hot under the collar as genius. But
well, they're supposedly investigating for referee abuse, which I didn't see the game, I didn't see it, but who submitted it? Did he get him in the tunnel? Did he get he's like, I don't understand, like, unless he's bailed him up and basically told Perenara he's a fucking clown, I don't see what there is. If it's been...
Which he is for missing that call.
But if it's been brought up in the sense of a ground manager or an official or someone on the sideline, why the game's been going to put in a complaint because he said something. There's plenty of stuff said on the sidelines.
Someone around Ricky's got to be doing a better job of just getting him away from
the situation. They need to put him back in the box so he can just do a Bellamy. Like Bellamy...
Mate, you go up the tunnel first before the refs get there.
Bellamy gets a chance to just go wild in the box and he gets it all out of his system before he goes in the shed. Ricky's down the sideline. I think that gets him extra hot under the collar when things aren't going right because he's so close to the field. I'm really surprised Ricky just hasn't run on the field and tackled someone or punched a ref yet.
I think he sent a few chairs flying.
He's drop kicked a few. He's put that old torpedo right foot through a few chairs. But
anyway, play on.
Yeah, I was a bit surprised about that because unless he, again, people are alleging he wasn't a face-to-face confrontation, I don't know how you come up with abuse. Like, there'd be plenty of people who have said something on the sideline or whatnot.
I dare say all of his players get abused.
Oh, 100%. But there you go. That's a set of six for this week. But guess what's back? The power rankings. Brought to you by the Penrith Solar Centre. We've had 3 weeks now. We're heading into week four. So for the first time, we will be visiting our power rankings brought to you by the Penrith Solar Centre. Don't be sidelined by rising power bills this season. The team at Penrith Solar Centre are dedicated to providing Western Sydney residents with the highest quality solar solutions and energy experience. When it comes to taking your electricity bills, the team at PSC will get you over the trial line, saving you thousands per year in energy costs. Call them today, 1800 20 29 30, or visit www.penrithsolar.com.au. Shout out to everyone the other week that said that, that every time they see a sign that flashes up in their head, means we're doing our job.
Correct.
Good times. Power rankings, Brock, for the first time. Who is your number one?
Panthers. That's it.
Fair enough.
Undefeated, best side in the comp at the moment.
Yep, well, I've got the Panthers at one as well. As you said, undefeated. You can only beat what's in front of you the first 2 weeks, which wasn't a great side. Both under strength the other night and got the job done.
Yep.
Looking forward to obviously seeing them play.
Minor premiers.
Over the next few weeks.
Grand finalists.
And especially, not who they got this week. They got Manly this week and the weekend after Friday night football. The Raiders down here, which will be great.
And then the Knights, I think, as well, the following Thursday.
Couple of good games coming up. Who's your number two?
Para. Watched them live the other night. They were good. Undefeated. And I like what I'm seeing from Para. They beat the Sharks, beat Melbourne, beat Brisbane away. So,
well, I've gone Souths. First round, obviously diabolical for a half. Second half, clicked into gear. Too little, too late. Bit scrappy against Manly, but on the weekend against the Roosters, red hot, very physical. Yeah. Only issue I have, and I message this to you, maybe they need to ask their opponents to wear Roosters jerseys every week. Because if they play with that sort of intent, that sort of line speed, aggression, and their left-hand side shape when they've got a quick roll forward off Cameron Murray, and particularly laid a great platform, they're near unstoppable.
Yeah.
So, number three.
I've got the Rabbits.
Yep, and I've got the Eels in that third spot. Similar deal, undefeated. Two of the teams have played, you know, not the greatest situation. They almost shit the game against Brisbane, but they got the job done. Cronulla depleted for half that game, but obviously a tough effort the week before against Melbourne. Some good signs there. So, yeah. Got them at three. Number four, I think we might have the same. I got the Storm.
Yeah, Storm, yeah.
Two losses or not, they're missing players. Tough effort again the other night. Should have got the job done, realistically. Disappointing way to concede the try at the end, but no Grant, no Pappenhausen, no Finucane, no Felice. You're basically talking four rep players. Rough start of the year. Still knocked off Souths. I've not lost any hope in what they're doing. They've competed with top four sides. It's been a rough draw. And the next 2 weeks now, they get to play the Dogs and the Broncos.
Yep.
So, as a Melbourne fan in particular, I'm expecting two wins and two hopefully decent wins the next 2 weeks.
Yeah.
But once Harry Grant and a few people come back, I think things will obviously get better. But can't fault their effort in those two games. Wish they would have jagged one of them, but can't fault their effort.
Mm.
That your four as well?
Yeah, Storm. Yeah.
Who's your number five?
Raiders.
Same deal. Disappointing on the weekend, but obviously a hard case when you lose three players from the first 15 minutes. Got run down at the end. First two opponents, not the greatest, but regardless, they've got the wins. I still think, as we've said before, they've got a bit to work through after losing Hodgson last season, integrating some guys back into that team and working on that spine, but I think there's still plenty of upside. Number six.
Titans.
Nice. I've got, still, and some people might disagree, I've still got the Roosters at six.
Yeah.
Two good wins to start off. I know the injury is a massive blow. It might take them a few weeks to sort it out, but I still think there's enough quality there. It was a disappointing result, and I think the scoreline didn't reflect the other night, but in a week or two, this could be much different.
Mm.
Who's your seven?
Roosters.
Yep. Well, I've got the Titans at that spot. You can only beat what's in front of you. The first week, obviously, a little disappointing with the Warriors game, but the last 2 weeks, they've given it to the Broncos. A bit disappointing defensive in the back end, and on the weekend, they really stuck the boot into the Cowboys.
Yeah, well, they actually play for 80, so, close enough to 80 on the weekend.
Good to see. And again, I know some people have said, you know, they're two sides that are down near the bottom, but again, there's improvement. There's new players there. They're building combinations as well. And number eight?
Knights.
And I've got Newcastle as well. I had them at seven, but, you know, same deal. They beat the Dogs. Tough win over the Warriors, which they jagged then. They're missing some players. I'm sure they'll bump up a few spots once they get back. Ponga had no best on the weekend, Green, etc. But it just seems at the moment, I know they missed those few players that we just spoke about. It's always games like that where you expect them to win that they seem to let you down.
Mm.
And I think they've had a habit from memory the last few years in milestone games at McDonald Jones Stadium of losing. I don't think they've had a real good run of celebrating milestone games at home, which is fairly disappointing, to be honest.
Yeah, well, it is.
Pierce is 300th, 18 errors to 6, just borderline played like an under-20 style team. No respect for the football. Had 10 to 15 decent minutes, almost pulled the win out of their ass. Dropped the football, conceded first play off a scrum play.
Yeah,
not really great, but...
Yeah, not great.
There you go. First power rankings for the year. Posted up on the discussion page and the fifth and last page. Feel free to post them up still and let us know who are your power rankings for the first time this year. Brought to you by Penrith Solar Centre. There's no one better if you're looking to get a solar system. Reviews of the games from the weekend. Boxhead Panthers 12-10 over the Melbourne Storm. Absolute cracker. And even considering the fact that, as we said, high-level players missing on both sides. Melbourne, four representative players missing. The Panthers, Coruscant, Cleary, two absolute gun players as well. Very tight contest. Melbourne, no surprise with those outs. Kept things very simple. Tried to just play through the middle. Channel. They went left majority of times, obviously, to Munster, who had a very big night running meters-wise, and his contribution to the game slid through a couple of times. But, yeah, very, very simple game plan from then. Trying to work off the back of field position, errors and territory. And for the Panthers, wasn't the greatest of nights, but they stuck in there. And at the back end of the game, when all seemed a little bit lost, and they'd lost Edwards and had to have a bit of a reshuffle there, They found a try with a couple of minutes left. Catewell, with a bit of football, slices back on the inside, beats a couple of guys and scores. The kickoff situation was very, very tense. And in the last play of the game, kick-out goes down like James Brown on stage. I can't go on! Then suddenly revives himself, runs over like the Liquid Man and gets under the football.
Yeah, it was just a crazy game, wasn't it? It was pretty messy and grinding and end-to-end.
Very
physical.
And then physical.
Like that last 10 minutes, it just lit up, hey? It was great. Great finish. Great to be in attendance to see it. It was awesome.
Mm.
Loved it. But yeah, old kick out. He would have been shot if he stayed down on the ground.
Oh, what about it?
But got up and made it.
He did.
A play that we'll be talking about for a long time.
I think he got all the credit. I still think some credit has to go
Lainer.
To May and Lainer. May absolutely absorbed
O-line
to start with, which slowed him down enough to not let him just initially burrow in. He got buckled, but to jump in front of him, that's dangerous.
Mm.
Lainer was also there, like you said, made a really, really good effort. Olam needs to give himself a triple there, because after live it was hard to see because we're on the hill and the big screen there didn't have the full shot. When I went home and watched that, he passes that.
He still should have scored.
Oh, I don't care. He should have passed it. Mm. That's a try. Every day of the week and early on, Kenny Bromwich needs to give himself a triple as well. Did the right thing to get through the line for a try for Olam earlier and then just kind of plods along and runs in Edwards. Costs a try that was basically a shoo-in.
Mm.
That was very disappointing. Penrith side of things, Burton, you've seen why they haven't let him go.
Well, that's why they haven't let him go.
Kicking game was outstanding.
He can win games when Cleary's out against good teams. So yep.
Held himself defensively. They did get after him a little bit. Did his job.
Yeah, he could.
But particularly the kicking game, very, very good. And on their side of things, no surprise, he was very, very good. Ty was massive out of yardage. Catewell had another great game. You're seeing why. Like we said, for a lot of people that were saying, how do you like him more than Martin? Well, I just think he's a more polished player and brings a bit more to you on the edge. I think Martin's a little more straight up and down, and with the way the rules are going, suits that sort of bench role where you can play edge or middle. Yo was good again, forward pack for the most part. And on the Melbourne side of things, thought Munster, pretty good game. Had a bad miss near the back end, but was really big. Welch had another great game. Thought Cheese was good in patches again. That shot he put on Eisenhuth, dear Lord.
Yeah, it's brutal.
But I still think, again, the future goes through Harry Grant.
Yeah, we'll see, won't we?
There's no doubt about it. Dragons, 38-12 over Manly. Well, what do you say about this
stinker.
Guy? Manly.
Dragons are really good, though.
They were Dragons really good. They're
playing good footy. And I said I wanted to see it for a few weeks in a row. Now I want to see it against a top eight side, yeah.
Yeah. Bit stunned. There's a lot of guys that found some best form, we thought.
I'm not sure whether it says as much about the Dragons as it does about how bad Manly is.
Yeah.
I don't know. It's that time of the year. You don't.
Well, really... one thing I will say, Norman back after the suspension straight in with Hunt and McCulloch and the way that's looked so far, it's pretty clear that that's working out better than what most people would have expected, including myself. Service has been good. Hunt looks a lot more confident playing off him. Norman did some things that we haven't seen in a long time on the weekend. Actually dug into the line, engaged, got himself, you know, a couple of nice passes there. Sims looked a bit sharp, had a couple of good involvements. They picked him apart on both sides of the field,
mm-hmm.
left and right edges. They embarrassed Moses Suli in particular, but they also chopped up the other edge with Lomax, who I still think even in a big win doesn't get enough football. The forward pack, Vorney, was good. All the forwards in general, I thought Tyrell did a really good job to the middle. Kerr's having a good time, like... If you're looking at the other side, I think the only real upside that I saw out of Manly was some of the flashes of Schuster. Schuster, for a 19-year-old kid who can play 5'8", centre, back row, I don't know what his position ends up being long term, but there wasn't many other positives I took away from it. Cherry Evans, really, really poor form and struggling. Their outside backs defensively and offensively bad. Walker at the back had some moments, was busted up. Their forwards are struggling. It's just not looking good full stop. Really not looking good at all. And it's not good when, as we said again, noise around the place, all the issues we had talked about, not having an iron, Tommy injured again. Now there's talk with the salary cap situation about, you know, that they possibly want to move Tapau on like they had to do with Fanua Blake. It's not what you want. It's really not what you want.
No.
So great signs for the Dragons and happy for a lot of tortured fans that we've had for a few years here. Hopefully things keep going.
Yep.
Some real good signs there, but in particular, watching the two halves play the way they did. McCulloch at nine, Dufty at the back, Lomax, as we said, get some of those quality touches. And even Burton, I know he's going to be suspended, but he had some flashes, Ramsey, etc. So some good stuff there. And unfortunately, I guess the only downside to come out of it is Hunt thought he had a cork, he had a broken leg.
Interesting.
So tough bastard.
I'm sure you get those two mixed up.
But yeah, he's going to miss some time, but what an effort. He played almost the whole second half with a busted leg. Absolute insanity, but Dragons, two on the trot and Manly, doing some soul searching, boys, as one of my old coaches used to say. So there you go. Moving on from that one. South Roosters, 26-16, not a true reflection, that scoreline at all. I thought the Roosters were all pre-line, way too sideways. They got completely dominated through the middle and in yardage. The role that South got in particular, finally, Cameron Murray just being told to go back to playing through the middle, playing fast, getting down, get quick player balls. They look so much better when he in particular is the focal point of the middle. Their bench came on with Arrow, Nichols, really ate up some yards. When they chew up the middle like that, it makes it so much easier to roll those shapes out on the left-hand side where they've already got guys that have to have a good accountability inside, outside shoulder in Latrell, Cody Walker, and create danger or mismatches defensively, but especially with that roll on, and they just pulled them apart. The Roosters really, really looked flat and on the back foot, couldn't get any yardage, were dominated defensively, and probably to sum things up at the back end of the half is when Saluka Fifita did the old rabbit chop to the back ahead and got suspended, and it basically summed up their whole night.
Yeah, it was ridiculous. It was first half and it ruined the game, didn't it? Was it first half?
Yeah, 18-0 right on half time. They scored again early second half. It was 24-0.
This is the second night of my 3-night rugby league binge on the weekend. Yeah, the Roosters never looked in it.
Nah.
They couldn't even get out of their own end. They couldn't make yards. South bashed them. South ran over the top of them. It looked like boys versus men from men versus boys from real early on. I actually thought the scoreline, both at half time and full time, flattered the Roosters. Heaps.
If you would have told me, if you were a South better and you had 1-12,
you would have been filthy.
You would have been, oh no, if you had 1-12 South, you would have just thought, this is a miracle.
Yep.
Thought it was a close miracle. Game. It was like
the last play of the game.
That should have been 40.
Yep.
That's the only people that would have been happy.
Yeah, I said that when I was at the game.
Because I thought this is going to be a close game. I would not have thought they were going to get stuck in on. But
there wouldn't have been many South 13 plus. Plenty of South 1-12, you would have thought. So I reckon that was a win for the punters.
And then, obviously, after the terrible first half, the sin bin and that whole debacle, they lost their heads further in the second half. You had Jared running around, alluring to himself, six agains, penalties, Joey Lussick getting involved with the crap. Then they had the real sour note within a short period of time of Collins getting completely put to sleep and stretch it off. Non-contact injury to Keary, ACL, gone for the season, then Lachlan Lamb twisting his knee. So if the game couldn't have gone any worse, things really, really had some salt driven into the wounds at the back end of the game for the Roosters. We've already talked about the repercussions moving forward and where they go from here from the South side of things. We said it the first 2 weeks, we've seen patches of it, but when you see it strung together for 50, 60 minutes, you see why a lot of people have them as their premiership favourite.
Yeah, 100%. They were really, really good. Now let's see it again consistently. Yeah,
Latrell keeps building. His combination with Cody Walker's great. His ball playing, his running, everything he's doing right now, he's doing it well.
Yeah,
he's proven a lot of people wrong. Happy to see it. Cody Walker playing some great football. The Murray thing, I've never understood this obsession of we'll play him on an edge, we'll move him here, we'll use him as a link. Fuck all that off. The best part of Cameron Murray's game is the fact that he's low to the ground. Good footwork, gets between defenders, strong as shit, and has the quickest player ball in the competition. Everything sparks off the back of him doing that in the middle. They've now got a complementary piece that suits the new rule changes and being able to impact the game off the bench in Arrow after they start off with a couple of bigger bodies. And Nichols is getting better, it seems, at the back end of his career and accelerating bit minutes as the years have gone on. Bigger role last year, having a great role with Arrow rolling off the bench and had a big impact with him on the weekend when he came onto the field as well.
Yeah.
Defensively, their two edges, I really like Colin Matangi. I think that suits him down to the ground. If they needed more impact for their middles off the bench, I'd have him there, but I don't think they have anyone better to play on that edge. Still had a few errors, as did Sua, but I think you'll take an error or two with what those two bring physically to the game. So
yeah,
good signs there for South Sydney Roosters. The people I kind of felt sorry for thought Collins, like I said, led the way before he got carried for that forward pack. But Tedesco, honestly, could he be any busier in a beaten team?
No.
He's ridiculous.
Where's he going?
He's absolutely everywhere. Thought Tupou tried hard. He got Wheelbarrow back a few times, as did most of the outside backs. But nothing happens when your forward pack gets blown away like theirs did. So some issues there for Robinson and now those injuries. Don't know what it's going to take, but I think there needs to be a bit of a chat with Jared, Toki, Liu, a couple of those guys, because they need more. Especially now you've got those young guys coming in. Warriors, Raiders, 34-31. I was out doing some flood work and I messaged you because I missed this completely. This sounded like it was absolutely berserk.
Many of us have those stubborn pounds that seem impossible to lose, no matter how good we eat or how hard we work out. My solution is PlushCare. PlushCare is a leading telehealth provider with doctors who are there for you day and night to partner with you in your weight loss journey. They can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Plus, they accept most insurance plans. To get started, visit plushcare.com/weightloss. That's plushcare.com/weightloss.
Absolutely berserk. Yeah, it's a good way to describe it.
Well, if you'd like
game,
me,
it was just a game of two halves, really.
25-6 at half time, you're thinking.
Yeah, you're probably going to switch it off.
Four scores, that's gone.
I kept it on, but I was passively watching it. But it was more about the interchanges. Well, not so much more about the interchanges. It was about the interchanges. That's what turned the game. But they'd had interchange problem in the first half, the Raiders, and they sort of reacted to it by punching the Warriors in the face. And the Warriors really didn't. They wobbled. They really needed halftime, I felt. And they sort of steadied at halftime. And then they just gradually chipped away and started to cycle and started to put some fatigue in the Raiders. And you know, they were able to score a couple of soft tries. The one off the forward pass was shouldn't have been a try, but there are a few others that were scored. Like the Nikarima try was super soft.
Just slid through.
And Jordan Rapana should have scored in the end. Like he had the ball in the wrong hand. He had the ball in the right hand from where the defender was coming, and the defender knocked it out.
I know he should have held it in the other hand, but
no, it would have mattered 100%.
I thought Rogers still had enough of his body through.
He could have had that arm out to move that hand away or whack that hand away or tuck it into your body and use your right arm to fend him away.
Or do what some have done. Go airborne with both the hands. Try to get vertical.
I don't understand what this fascination with going airborne. Right? He was going to get to the corner. It wasn't a matter of height or distance. It was a matter of getting the ball down.
Yeah. Well, sometimes they do that whole thing where they almost throw themselves out of touch like they're going to get clear. But I thought Roger got well enough of his body in the picture.
Well, he did, and that also made me think, why didn't he stop and come back on his inside?
Or try to absorb it a bit like Ferguson did the other week, or I don't know. Probably better options.
Look, well, they're all better options than having the ball in the arm where the defender's going to hit and make contact.
Oh.
Especially when it was a one-arm carry. It wasn't a two-hand carry.
I got to watch it on a bit of a faster replay after missing it live, and yeah, at halftime at 25-6, even with the injuries and losing the players early, I thought surely that's going to be enough. They're going to be able to hold on. But the Warriors reeled them back in. Sheck was incredible. The running meters, the offloads, the tackle breaks, the try saves, as always. In particular, that facet of his game over the last few years, the try saves have been great. I know there was a fair bit of fatigue in it, but Nikarima obviously took advantage of some lazy defenders, had a bit of a field day. The Bunty of forward chase down was my highlight of the game.
Mm.
That's me running away from Monday. He just hunted down. That is one of those efforts that you look back on in a game and go, that's huge. That's big place in the front row.
Yeah.
But, yeah, obviously the forward pass, huge. Canberra fans wouldn't be happy about that on top of
the should have won the game anyway. So
yeah. So
I get they got a dumb call.
The boogeyman come back to get him in the second half.
25-6, and then they had a try at the end to win it.
I think from what I heard earlier, Chris and James were cleared, but Tapine and Curtis Scott potentially are going to be missing this week. So they've got one or two guys potentially back this week, but potentially lost one or two. But again, one of those games, again, like you said, with that sort of lead and that situation that you'd like to think that you'd be able to hold on to.
Close it out.
Because hopefully that doesn't come back to burn you in the long term. For the Warriors, I guess, they got burned at the last post last week against the Newcastle Knights, but still won this week, missing a couple of players of their own. come under it without their halfback, O'Sullivan filling in. Obviously, Aitken, and they lost Chenault to Van Harris as well. So, Brown and the Warriors would obviously be very happy with that result. Broncos Dogs 24-0.
Seriously,
terrible game.
I'm voting for, like, we should be able to skip like one or two games a week. This was the worst game I've ever seen in my life.
This is easy to sum up. For 60 minutes, basically nothing happened.
Broncos just, they played nervous. They played tense. As soon as they got to 12-0, if that was in 20 minutes, like after 20 minutes, it would have been 50.
Exactly. Probably the only thing I took away from this, yeah, they cut them apart at the back end. I still think they've got better individual players, and any of the talk or some of the guys already going, Kevy's got the win. It's the same game they won last year after the COVID break. The only game they won was against the Bulldogs. Yeah. So it doesn't solve any of the problems at all.
Well, it solves the problem in that they've won. They look happier.
I'm still looking at one thing, which is, why the fuck do you play Tom Dearden for 5 minutes? Play him, or you play him in cup. At this point in time.
But again, that's something that hasn't changed from Seibold to Walters.
So I just don't get that.
Seibold was doing the same thing, sort of.
And I know they won, but I still didn't think the halves were great. I still think Tommy Dearden's better than both of them. I think Dearden should be in the half somewhere. You just simply...
Maybe sign somewhere. I don't know. Who knows?
Well, that again. That's
I'm
the
sick
only,
of talking about
Brisbane. The only other thing, but...
Because they're so bad at rugby league, but yet they get spoken about so much. So.
Well, Azarko obviously come up with the first play to open the floodgates. They ran away with it from there.
God, are we really going to talk about this game?
No, I'm just summing up the back end. Coates obviously had a couple of big plays at the back end. The kickoff really put the icing on the cake. Thought Farnworth had a pretty good game as well.
Farnworth was good.
But overall, the standard of this game was horrendous. For the Dogs, doesn't get any better.
Well, what does that say for the Dogs?
They 100%. Pounded. And they lost Marshall King again to a foot. Raymond Fatala-Mariner was the week before. It's not getting any easier. And the next couple of weeks, I'm pretty sure their draw gets ugly. They got the Storm coming up. I think they got South as well.
They got South this week, Storm next week.
So it's only getting harder for the Bulldogs.
Enjoy.
For Brisbane.
Brisbane running the Storm.
They've got the Storm this week, and I'm pretty sure similar kind of run coming up afterwards. They've got Parramatta for a second time in this 8 weeks. I think they've got South, Panthers, etc. So they've got a run coming up of all those sort of finals teams. So I'm glad they've got that win. They've got Haas coming back this week because they've got a tough draw coming. Moving on from that one. Eels, Sharks, you were at this game. I'm going to ask you, because some people said they really enjoyed Cronulla's effort in the second half. Like, to me, a lot of my interest disappeared when I knew they had no bench left for the second half.
Yeah.
Because...
I loved it. It was great. That stadium's unbelievable. It's an absolute belter.
But you enjoyed the game?
Loved
despite it. Despite the fact it basically had zero chance of the Sharks winning?
I drank about 10 Iron Jacks. So.
That doesn't get to the point of what I'm making.
Yeah.
That
increased my enjoyment value.
Yeah,
so.
as a viewer at home...
Paying $7.80 for an Iron Jack didn't really excite me, though.
Nah. When I text you at halftime saying they've got Kennedy in for a HA at halftime and he's not coming
back. We sort of knew that on the ground. They were announcing it over the loudspeaker, but they weren't announcing... When they failed, you just sort of had to work out where he hasn't been back on, so he's failed.
Yeah, well, good on him for holding on for 25, 30 minutes in the second half, but I didn't enjoy it. They basically got...
You didn't enjoy the game.
...pummeled from pillar to post and were just hanging on for dear life.
I'll tell you the one thing that stadium exacerbates is the physicality.
Yeah, I've enjoyed
that
one.
You were so close to the game. It's not funny. Like, we were behind the post at the end where Cronulla were receiving... or defending in the first half, and yeah, it was awesome.
Well,
it was
how many
great night? Well, I had this bloke sitting behind me, who was fucking legit mental. He was fucking yelling some ridiculous things out, things that I can't repeat on the podcast. But there were families around. Like, he was making me squirm in my seat. This bloke, mad psychopathic Parramatta fan. There's 1,000 of you out there, but mate, this bloke was next level.
And shit crazy.
And he stunk. Yeah, well, it just wasn't like, yeah. So we sat in, the family section. The, what do you call it? The cheap seats or whatever you want to call it. But
you should have Happy Gilmore'd him. I'll see you in the parking
lot. No, he wasn't offending, he wasn't offending me. It takes a lot to offend me. Yeah, but
was he offending children?
He was screaming at Josh Dugan. He was screaming at Aaron Woods.
Dear Lord.
He was screaming at Mitchell Moses.
He was that guy. He's screaming at his own player.
Yeah, he's like, Mitchell Moses, you're shit. He was just fucking giving it to him. I was like, mate, this guy's out of control.
Was he as bad as the guy we had at Origin that
take
other
year? Take your fucking shit tattoos back to Canberra. Dugan, he was just giving, he was absolutely laced, this bloke.
I don't know if you remember this, and this is going
and off. He had his mum with him.
Oh, wow. Even better.
It was unbelievable.
Quality. Do you remember the origin when we won the series? And we were down, obviously, in the members, which is generally, you know, we don't really fit into the members. Some people in there are corpos and got their business partners and sponsors. There was a big business group next to us, I remember, for that year we won. And they're all suited up and booted. And then just as the game kicked off, one of the guys who's obviously a bit entitled because he's got a bit of cash, he was standing up telling Hodges to basically die and this person and that. Right, and I remember the people around us, because one guy had his kid there, told him to calm it down. He'd only had like two beers, this bloke, and he was just giving it to the bloke and his family. And I remember about six or seven people getting up around us basically like, we're going to flog you.
Yeah.
And he got taken away. I was just like, I've never seen something escalate so quickly from someone who was legit sober, but the entitlement to think just because he was in the you expensive seats... That he could tell someone to die and someone else to fuck off and all the rest
wasn't
of it.
Great.
The people around us, in particular a few of the dads now, quicker they lit up, I was like, this is excellent. This bloke's about to get flogged.
But yeah, look, the bloke that sat behind me should be under house arrest. He was fucking out of control. That was great.
Well, like I said, it's not very often in a game that you run for 2,400 metres to 1,300, but when you've got a team that's lost
Clint their whole Gutherson bench... was unbelievable.
Yeah, but I still find it hard to take much out of it when you've ran at a team for 40 minutes relentlessly, had 60% of possession, who were just out on their feet and got guys defending in positions.
Yeah, or I think you're probably undervaluing Cronulla. They tried pretty hard.
I'm not undervaluing what they did. I'm giving them a rap for it. But to me, the game was done.
Yeah, it was done.
Parramatta had to win this game, and they did win this game. Good on Cronulla for holding on and not letting him score until about the 70th minute. But to me, the contest was gone with the four guys off the field.
Yeah.
So from that perspective, I didn't enjoy just seeing Parramatta run them ragged and go over the top of them to the point that they broke. I didn't really enjoy the game.
Yeah, well, you're an idiot. It was a good game. Play there you on, go. Move on.
You're an idiot. Move on. Gutherson was great. Brown, Murata, Paulo, etc. All those guys are good. Moses, I wonder if he's clear to play this week. All those Sharks guys. Interested to see if they've been named when we do our tips.
Yeah.
And that soon as well. Is there anyone you thought stood out for the Sharks in that slugfest?
Yeah, old mate, Toby Rudolph.
Old Rudolph, Tarzan.
He was good.
Had a dig.
Who else was good?
I just thought they were hanging on for dear life.
Yeah, they were. They bloody tried hard.
Mm. All right, we'll get off that one then. Good effort, good win.
Brayley was good. Norm was good. Mm-hmm. I don't know, whatever.
Moving on. Play on. You were sourced. Tigers Newcastle.
I wasn't sourced, but I had a good night.
Tigers Newcastle, 24-20. Another one of those ones that we talked about that a lot of people think they should win and they didn't. Losing Best and Stafford Tower before kickoff.
Piercy 300.
Obviously didn't help, but milestone game, 300 at Newcastle.
Threw it down the road.
And to sum it up, they were shit.
They weren't good.
18 errors to 6. They never gave themselves a chance.
Jesus, that many errors.
Anytime they looked like they had half a chance, they dropped the football. They certainly weren't helped by their back five. Shibasaki had an absolute barry.
He did have a barry.
He couldn't hold
the football. He was moving out of the way of kicks in the end.
Poor Dom Young didn't have the best ending.
He was game. It was like the ball came near him and he was screaming.
Yeah.
He was trying to hide under a sheet or
Shiba wasn't
something.
Having a good time.
Smouse Jr.
Smouse. Schwane.
Schwane Jr. Can't say that anymore because all the fucking Chris Lilly shows have been banned.
Yeah.
Oh, take it away. Yeah, geez, let's take funny stuff off TV. Fuck me, what do we come to?
Yep.
Anyway, I want to be able to watch that. So you tell me I can't watch that now? I can't go on Netflix anywhere and watch that?
I don't know. I think it's all gone.
What was that one called?
That was Angry Boys.
I reckon I got it on DVD, thank God.
Probably. But he didn't have the greatest of days. That reshuffle hurt.
Angry Boys.
They had a quick little period in the second half after being under the pump where they found a bit of football. Connor Watson certainly brought some spark off the bench. Cut through, set up a nice try. Tex Hoy had some good moments, despite the fact he made a few errors during the day. Getting Piercy, a try on his 300. Frizzell had a pretty good game. He scored that try. And when you thought they'd got that lead back, and then you thought, here we go, the poor Tigers on wobbly legs, it might be all done with. And Shibasaki drops another ball. scrum play, first one off the scrum, in the corner, Nofaluma, dead and buried. Yeah. All that effort to drag themselves back in and undone. Adam Dewey's goal kicking. Wow. He was hitting them.
He was, yeah.
Bit reminiscent. But I thought he was very, very good. Steadied things for Brooks, defended well, kicked well. As a collective, obviously much better defensively than what they've been in the last few weeks. Leilua resigned to cup. They obviously had a big win on the weekend, 50 points. But if you win, I doubt you're going to make many changes. So you'll probably have to spend another week down in cup. But overall, I guess he got the response he wanted. And Yuta Kamanu had his best game since coming into first grade with lots of wraps on him. Come up with a nice try there when he got through the line. Very mobile. And I think Laurie's been their best player to me week in, week out. He's been outstanding so far for the Tigers.
Yeah, he has been. Yeah.
Really good boy.
Really, really good boy. It was just a weird game to watch. The Tigers were good. They're always going to be. They're always going to react after last week, dropping Leilua and Newcastle home. Massive home crowd, daytime footy, Pearcey's 300th. You couldn't have enough. You could have thousands on them, but no good.
Nope. They're Gonskis. So good effort from the Tigers. They get one on the board. Let's see if they can make it back-to-back this week up against the Eels, what is becoming a traditional clash on the Easter Monday. For Newcastle, like I said, there were some good players. Frizzell, Watson, Barney had a good game, but 8 missed tackles. Said like Tex had some good moments, but 4 errors. And then poor Dom Young, the Englishman on debut, the 19-year-old, didn't have the greatest ending there. Couple errors at the back end. And Shibasaki just had a nightmare. I think he'll be doing practice, like you said, this week, catching some bombs at training. But also at the same time, he's, for the most part, been a centre. I don't know how much work he's done with kickers, catches, but clearly needs to do more.
Yes.
Because it wasn't a great day, that's for sure. But leaving that one behind, last game of the round, your mob, the Titans, huge win, 44-8. The Cowboys, plain and simple, awful. No response to some of the criticism in the last 2 weeks and changes and trying to spark things up. The only positives I really saw were small things in the sense of Holmes found space a few times at fullback, but to me, he looked like he's still not up to scratch fitness-wise to make effort on effort. Tuolungi was the only real highlight defensively for me. Some of his decisions off the edge. You see a lot of centres and wingers that are younger these days struggle to sum things up, even when they're short of numbers. He kept landing on the pass. He laid a few people out, so I thought he made a good impression in his first game back in, after obviously after waiting a couple of weeks. And then another one who does the same thing week in, week out, whether you like him or not, and I'm not the biggest fan of some of his antics, but it's Josh McGuire. At least you know what you're going to get week to week.
100%.
But
he's going to go in and be a bust.
When he sprayed them after the game, I thought that pretty much sums it up. Sick of the shit. We've got a soft underbelly and we keep talking and we have little moments in attack, but then we just undo it with poor efforts or lazy efforts. I don't think he could have summed it up any better.
It's all fair.
So, and as a collective, like we said, say what you will about a few of the comments and the way Payton's approached so far, but it highlights what we've said in before, that 3 years without finals, the issue is clearly not just Paul Grant. There's a problem in that playing group.
Yeah.
And there's a lot of guys that obviously aren't doing their job, and it might be a bigger clean out or a bigger task than most expected. And like a lot of people saying the last few years, have them in the eight or close to eight or things will improve, it's just not happening. There's a lot hanging over. On the Titans side of things, Tino again, I thought, was outstanding. Probably a couple errors trying to do too much, but man, you've got to be happy with that boy.
Oh, yeah.
He's been outstanding. I loved him at Melbourne. I didn't think he was going to... I didn't think he was going to be like this, but in the sense of just every week so far, it's been personal to try and hurt everyone and be the leader and from the front, from a bloke who's 20. I'm sure things accelerated last year from having a bigger role in Melbourne, whether it be starting, bench, to getting to Origin, having that confidence, taking what he's learned there and then going to the Gold Coast and thinking, well, you know, instead of, as has happened in the past, like we spoke about, guys going there to take the piss, going, I want to own this. I want to be the leader. I want to really come in here and make a statement. I think he's done that and then some.
Yeah.
In spades. I think Fifita obviously had a nice week last week, had a good game again on the weekend. I'm not going to go off like some people saying he's already justified his pay packet because they've played two pretty average sides. But if that's a sign of what's to come off what their middles are doing, which is what allows him to get that kind of ball on the edge, I think... Yeah, my biggest sign is watching Tino, Moiaki and the bench, the way Lasone, Yolif and the value they're getting out of him. If they do a job like that through the middle, there's going to be plenty of opportunities to get in good football out of David Fifita and the outside backs.
Yeah.
But I'm more impressed in the sense of I didn't think Tino was... not just his play, but the whole way he's carrying himself right now in that team. He's getting around the field like a hitman. Yeah. He wants to hurt everyone. He wants to own every result. He wants to run through everyone's face. I'm extremely impressed, more so from the impact he's trying to make, not just through his actions, but the way he's getting around the field.
Mm-hmm.
He's playing like he is the baddest man on the planet. And it's awesome to watch.
Yep, machine.
So, good signs there from their two big guns. Thought the halves were nice and steady. Boyd did his job. Fogarty steered him around. Brimson had some good moments at the back. And again, if his form continues, obviously going to be staking a claim to have another crack at that Queensland jersey, especially if Ponga, who's had a bit of an injured delayed start, doesn't kick straight back into form. If not, at least throwing his hand up for that utility spot off the bench.
Yeah.
So, good signs.
Yeah, they're flying it. Again, we played the Cowboys and the Broncos.
So. Canberra this week, so a better test.
Good test. We always play Canberra in the first month. It's good, so, good time to get Canberra as well, I reckon.
Oh, 100%. Good confidence off two
wins. Not that it matters. I think Titans are going to just go in and tear heads off whoever they play this year.
Yep. Looking forward to watching it, though, like you said. What day is that on?
Don't know.
Saturday, I think.
Good.
We're about to get to that. But that wraps up the reviews of the games for the weekend. Now, into our tips and betting preview, and we've got a sponsor on board again. The charity account is back.
Yeah.
Bluebet have come on board.
Bluebet.
Thank you, Bluebet. Outstanding. New sponsor of the Penrith Panthers Stadium out here.
And, yeah.
On board with the
fifth I didn't even last. Know until they sent a email through last week. So they said, oh, we're the new naming sponsor of the Panthers. I said, shit. Because Penrith, I think under Gus, he said, I'll never sell the name of the stadium up, but obviously with COVID, and it just makes sense if you can make a bucket load out of it, and it's obviously a huge benefit to whatever company, particularly with how Penrith are flying.
Last week, speaking to a few people that work with the local paper and the bits and pieces who broke the story originally, because I'd heard nothing about it, they said it's the biggest stadium sponsorship the Penrith's ever had, so clearly it was a good deal. But Bluebet. On board with the fifth and last NRL podcast for our charity account. No kickbacks for us, but charity, outstanding. We like doing our bit. So you've selected the charity. Who are we on board with for all our winnings this year? Who's it going to?
The Bears of Hope, which is for... they provide support for people who have had miscarriages, lost babies, stillbirths, all that sort of stuff, so... Yeah, a good charity. So
yeah, and there's plenty of good causes, as we've always said. We've done different charities over the years when we used to obviously have that account with Will Hill, and we really appreciated that at the time. But happy to have someone back on board now for the charity account. So Bears of Hope. Hopefully we punt well and we can get some cash in the kitty.
Yeah.
To donate thanks to Bluebet at the end of the year. So with that being said, people say don't promote alcohol, don't promote betting companies, but for charity purposes, Bluebet, get on board. If you don't have an account, Bluebet, because they're doing a good thing.
They are.
Charity, yep. Good times. And they're supporting a very, very good cause and on board with us in the charity account. That's all. We always hope to keep things going. We understood when things change, but it's great to have someone back on board from that. So $50 pop a week. Have a think while we're doing our tips about potential bet. And I'll have a think as well. But bluebet.com. Australians love the blue. Join the 100% true blue Aussie bookie today. Bluebet. Let's have a look, Brock. Let's go through it. The lineups and the first game we've got, Manly versus the Panthers for this week. What do you think about this one?
Manly versus the Panthers?
Oh, yes.
I think Panthers will kill them.
As far as changes for Manly, Morgan Boyle has been added to the bench. Taofao Sipley is the only change. Tommy Trbojevic is leased another round away at the minimum. Stand-in fullback Dylan Walker still there. And obviously the crisis in the back row with injury sees Josh Schuster stay there with the Panthers. We've obviously got that reshuffle with Dylan Edwards out. Stephen Crichton going back to the position he mainly played before he suddenly jumped into grade after a full year of playing 18s in schoolboy football, mostly as a six and a fullback. He's going to relocate there. And Matt Burton's going into the centres, which is good. Good ball runner, good ball player. Fills in that hole nicely. I really like the reshuffle. Nathan Cleary returns at halfback, and other than that, there is no changes to the Panthers side, so I'm pretty sure we're all
Panthers confident. Did you go through last week's tips?
Last week's tips, sorry. Come we on, both got 5. Roasty got 5, and Gossip got 4. The totals are me and you on 18, Gossip and roast on 17. I haven't seen a message yet with their tips, so I don't have theirs for now, but I will obviously for next week's results.
Yeah.
So just me and you, but for now we're both on the Panthers. I'm going to guess that they would have been on the Panthers anyway, so I don't think we're missing out.
If they're
out.
Not, they can give themselves a triple.
Oh, 100%. So with Bluebet, the odds for this one, the Panthers, $1.08, $6.90 for Manly. The handicap, -19.5, 1-12 Manly, $10, $26.13 plus Panthers, 1-12 is $4, $13 plus is $1.40. The Friday night early game is the Dogs up against South Sydney, another one that I'm sure will be fairly lopsided. And as far as the Bulldogs, there's been a big change. Marshall King out with a foot injury. Sione Katoa named to start a hooker. Nick Manny holds at fullback after a swap with Corey Allen, who goes to the wing. Lachlan Lewis called in at 5'8". Jake Averillo is dropped. Josh Jackson is suspended for a crush out. Opens the door for runoff Atoni to go into lock. And Jackson DePine and Dean Britt are onto the bench. A debut for young Jackson DePine. Dallin Zalesniak and Luke Thompson both due back next week. So a couple of troops on board there. For South, no surprise. No changes. And Junior Totola did not train with the side due to an injury with a hamstring. And Liam Knight's been ruled out indefinitely, still suffering from symptoms of his concussion. So, yeah, a couple of injuries there. And they've got some other guys, Braden Burns, Taff, Selle, and Tane Milne, who are still a couple of weeks away from being available for their squad. But I think this one's another pretty easy one to sort out.
You know what?
They've had a rough start of the year, and I think it's only going to get rough for the Bulldogs. And Bluebet, they agree, $9 are the Bulldogs. $1.06 bank interest for South Sydney. -21.5 is the line. 1-12 Dogs, $9.50, $13 plus $41. South, 1-12, $4.50, $13 plus $1.33. Storm Broncos, Friday night clash. Used to be a bit of a blockbuster, not so much in recent times for Melbourne. Ryan Pappenhausen is back from a neck injury, pushing Nico Hines back to the reserves. Tommy Eisen is out after copping that shot and gotten some busted ribs. Branko Lee has been delayed by Brisbane's COVID lockdown, which has denied him the ability to come down. Felice Kaufusi's back from suspension. And Dale Finucane is targeting round 5, with Harry Grant also a chance for next week. So for Melbourne, only really the one change there with Pappenhausen coming back into the side. Oh, hold on a minute. They said Tommy Eisenhoff was busted. They've named him to play. That's a surprise.
Yeah.
So the bench for now, Smoothie, Kamika.
What did they say was busted?
Well, last week when he came off originally, they were talking broken ribs from that shot. Now they're saying cartilage damage. So might be getting needled up and able to play. The bench looks the same as it got reshuffled last week, which was Chris Lewis, Darren Schoenig, Tui Kamika, and Tyson Smoothie. The extended bench now has Nico Hines, Aaron Penne, Trent Lorio, and Dean Eremiah. Wouldn't surprise me this week if he was tempted to give Eremiah his debut. He'd be one of the only the third or fourth Victorian player.
He's a Victorian.
To play for the Storm. And it wouldn't surprise me as well with Smoothie if he opted to have Nico Hines play in that role, or even Penne this week. On the Brisbane side of things, a couple of players returning. Payne Haas back from suspension. Matt Lodge back from his hamstring. So two guys added to the forward back. It sees Pangai Jr. and Flegler go back to the bench with John Asiata, who also returns. Reece Kennedy, Dearden, and Bulamar are all dropped from the side.
Wow.
And the odds for this one, massive again. $1.06 for the Storm, $9 for the Broncos. -20.5 the line. 1-12 Storm, $4.10, $13 plus $1.38. Brisbane Broncos, 1-12, $9.50, $34, $13 plus. Clearly, we're both on the Storm there.
Yeah.
No argument.
No argument.
Sharks versus the Cowboys for the early Saturday game. And interesting in this one, Wade Graham and Will Kennedy have been named to play, but still have to go through the concussion protocol. Sione Katoa suffered a suspected MCL injury, so he will be missing for at least 4 to 6 weeks. Marwin Hirotti comes on the wing. Britt Nakora accepted a 2-week ban for a shoulder charge on Clint Gutherson. His spot's taken by Teague Wilton, and the new face on the bench is Braden Trindle. They've obviously got a couple of players now missing, with Jesse Ramien still suspended, and Royce Hunt, Talakai, as we've said, have still been pushed back until round 7, and Johnson obviously still missing. For the Cowboys, lots of changes. Todd Payton's patience were run out. Jake Clifford and Esau Masters have both been dropped. Mitchell Dunn was injured. He misses out, as does Ruben Cotter. Justin O'Neill moves from the wing into the centres. Connolly Lemelu comes in to play his first game of the season, and Hamiso Tabuai-Fidow goes back to the wing. Purely on the fact of what I've seen so far, I have to tip the Sharks.
Yeah,
regardless of who's playing, because until the Cowboys show me otherwise, it's very, very hard to get on board.
Sharks
have been absolutely diabolical, but new back row, Ben Condon and Shane Wright coming in with those injuries. Maguire now moving into lock with Cotter now being out injured. Ben Hampton, another replacement, comes in to start at halfback with Scotty Drinkwater. So massive changes for them this week, looking for a response. Whether he gets it or not, we'll see. But both on the Sharkies, given the effort that you know they're going to put in, they are $1.38 favourite, $3.05 for the Cowboys. -7.5 is the line. 1-12 Sharks, $2.90, 13+$2.50. 1-12 Cowboys, $4.25, 13+ is $8 with Blue Bet. Gold Coast Titans up against the Raiders. Changes, Titans same 1-17 as last week, but pre-match we saw Peachy come into the team, Tino push into the front row. That is confirmed in this week's initial team release. So Fotuaka, Lasone, Jolie off the bench. Great impact last week. They've been named there this week. And for the Raiders, Dunamis, Louis and Hudson Young return in a boost for the forward pack that was bruised and battered last week. Louis comes in at prop. Ryan Sutton goes back to the bench, replacing Joe Tapine, who's out injured. Young replaces Sebastian Chris in the back row, who moves into the centres to fill in for Curtis Scott, who's out with a rib injury. Chris and Ryan James have to wait and see with the protocols for head knocks before they are named. But Boxhead, Titans supposed to be up there, potentially being relocated down here. What do you think?
Yeah, I'm tipping the Titans. I think they can win.
You're on?
Canberra didn't really impress me on the weekend.
Well, with a bit of a reshuffle as well, and a question mark over those two guys, I'm going to go with you. Getting on the Titans. And it's not been a bogey, but they've kind of smoked you a few times in recent years, and particularly usually play around one or two.
Yeah.
They've got to use them as a bit of a punching bag. I'm sure the Titans haven't forgot about that. And now you've got a few troops on board. I'd like to think that they'd be...
lay a bit of a smack back.
Keen to lay the boot in and let the Raiders know how it feels. So
I hope so.
We'll see how that plays out this week. But I can certainly remember the last few seasons when things weren't as great. In particular, it always seemed to be around one or two they played and things hadn't been that pretty. But the bookies got the Raiders as favourites with Bluebet, $1.59, $2.35. You like the Titans. -4.5, 1-12 Titans, $3.60, $5.50, 13+. Canberra Raiders, $2.90 for 1-12, 13+ is $3.30 with Bluebet. Newcastle Knights versus the Dragons. Knights looking to bounce back. Dragons are going to continue their good form. Bradman Best, as we said, he's obviously missing. Shibasaki goes into the centres this week, not on the wing, with Taua back, which sees Dom Young out of the side. Probably a good thing that Shibasaki's not there, back there catching bombs.
It's a mouse.
Blake Green is on the team list for the first time this season. So that's big. Number 17, as to they whether they have a reshuffle before kickoff and he somehow finds his way in and Kurt Mann might take a spot in the centres there over Shibasaki or someone else. I'm not too sure, but he's very, very close to return. That's a good thing for Newcastle. Brody Jones goes to the interchange from the reserves. Jacob Safidi's been named despite having failed to finish the game with a leg injury, so I have to wait and see. For the Dragons, Adam Clune comes in for Ben Hunt, who suffered that fracture to his fibula over the weekend. And at the moment, they're not sure when he'll be back. Braden Williams promoted from the bench to replace the suspended Jack Bird in the centres. And Max Feagai and Eddie Blacker come onto the reserves list. What's your thoughts here? It's up at Newcastle. I think they need to respond after last week. I think Hunt being out is a big blow. I still like the forward pack for the most part, the nine for the Newcastle situation, maybe a late reshuffle there for Green. I'm going to go Newcastle, not with a whole lot of confidence. I like what the Dragons have been doing.
Yeah, Newcastle.
The momentum they were building and then to Hunt get injured, I think that hurts. I do like Clune, but that whole combination that was starting to forge again with the three Brisbane boys previously, that's a bit of a blow.
Newcastle aren't going to lose 2 4 o'clock games in a row at home, are they?
Sunday surely games, not.
Main games.
And Bluebet agrees they've got Newcastle at $1.40. I still think it's a bit short given a few clouds there. $2.90 for the Dragons. -7.5 is the line. 1-12 for Newcastle. $2.80, $2.50, 13+. 1-12 for the Dragons. $4.40, $8, 13+. Roosters Warriors. This is a very difficult game on the Sunday, and we speak about that reshuffle. Tedesco and the back line stays intact. Manu's not. in the halves, but Hutchison is now the six with Walker at seven, with Lamb and Keary missing. Isaac Liu comes into the front row to start for Collins. Lussick stays at nine. Tokiaho, Crichton Tupanua, and Victor Radley back at lock. The new bench has Ikavalu with Jared Rea Hargraves, Nat Butcher, Fletcher Baker, and the extended reserves, depending on a possible reshuffle. Egan Butcher would be debuting. Ben Maskew, who's got an exemption to join. Joseph Sawali in the 20. And Takupa K. Hartapua in 21, who I doubt we'll see. Possible for a reshuffle, maybe. But we'll have to wait and see. On the Warriors side of things, they've had a foolish change with Peter Hickert ruled out for a knee injury, expected to miss a month. Marcelo Montoya gets his first game to make a debut in the centres for the Warriors. There's also a reshuffle in the pack. Syrian promoted from the interchange to start in second row. Toe Harris back to lock. Jazz Tavunga back to the bench. Tough game, Brock.
Yeah. Oh, man, hard one. I'll go the Roosters, just on faith.
I'm going to go the Warriors.
Good on you.
I think having a young guy in, having Hutchison, Lussick still there, I think those few spots have me a little bit worried that they might be able to get him with their forward pack. If they stay pretty much error-free and kind of get stuck into those guys, I think they can make it close. But
the Warriors were getting smacked down by Canberra when it was 17 v 17. So
yeah,
even hopefully, with a few out, like the Roosters are pretty.
Oh, still pretty good side. Depth, yeah, but I just think big loss there.
Big game in, like, for those people who think that the Roosters may miss the eight.
Oh yeah,
this is a pivotal game for the Warriors if they feel as though they can jump in.
Huge to see Walker. Good to get Radley back, but yeah, with Lussick and that in that setup, still no Verrill, still no Friend. Very interested to see how all these kids go playing those key positions, steering this side around the field.
Yeah.
Gonna need a lot of help from Hutchison. He's gonna need to step up this week to take a little bit of pressure off Tedesco. He's obviously been incredibly busy, plenty of touches of the football. And more looking to see the key matchup to me is the forward pack. They got dominated last week. They're coming up against a very handy Warriors forward pack. You need more from Jared, Toki, Liu, etc. If those guys don't step up, it's going to be very hard for these young kids in the spine positions to have any influence on the game.
Correct.
Yeah. So that's the main thing I'm looking for. Roosters are the favourites with Blue Bet. They were $1.45, $2.75 for the Warriors. The line is at -6.5. 1-12 Roosters, $2.80, $2.75, 13+. 1-12 Warriors is $4.20, $7, 13+. Last one, Easter Monday. Tigers, Para. This one, as far as changes are concerned, Madison returns after a precautionary week off. Isaiah Papali'i moves back to the bench. Keegan Hipgrave into the reserves. Mitchell Moses must pass the protocols after failing his HIA. Bryce Cartwright included for the first time on the reserves after that broken jaw in the preseason, and an unchanged squad for the Tigers. The only absentees are Sean Blort and Billy Walters as far as injuries are concerned. And Leilua, he is in the extended bench, but probably going to have to wait another week before he gets an opportunity. So, no surprise after a win, they stick with their team, but I'm going to go with the Eels.
Yeah, Eels. To get it's the always done. A game, though.
It is. But heavy favourites with Blue Bet are the Eels, $1.28. $3.60 for the West Tigers, -10.5 is a line. 1-12 for the Tigers, $4.75. $10, 13+. 1-12 for the Eels, $2.90. $2.25, 13+. So, there you go. Only difference we had was that Roosters Warriors game. Once we get gossip and race tips, I think those first few games are pretty straightforward, but there's a few 50-50s there. I think Titans Raiders would be a good game. Knights St. George, Roosters Warriors, Tigers Eels. There's a couple there that people might see as a bit of contest. Got any thoughts for the charity bet with Blue Bet, our $50 bet?
Probably the Titans. What price are they? We both got on them, and I think they're outsiders.
The Titans, they are $2.35, my friend.
Let's just do that.
So if you had your bippity on that, and if it's a bonus bet, you'd return probably, what, a little bit over? 65 or 60-something, maybe?
Yeah, something like that.
So there'd be money in the kit for the Bears, I hope, we're pushing forward through. So again, bluebet.com. Get on board the True Blue Aussie Bookie. We appreciate the support. Anyone who's willing to jump in for charity purposes is always much appreciated. So if you're out there like us and you usually bet on multiple apps, which we've all got, start laying your cash into Bluebet. Hopefully a bit of goodwill. Great thanks to them. Big thanks to the Penrith Solar Centre, and most importantly, big thanks to everybody out there listening to the show. Rate, review, subscribe, keep helping us grow. Message us, hit us up on Twitter. Like it, retweet it, keep spreading the good word. Send me a message
on Sunday for his birthday or he'll get upset.
Mate.
Easter. It's you share the same day as well, not the birthday of Jesus, but
the day he rose.
The day that Jesus rose.
Every couple of years.
You rose as well.
Every couple of years, me and JC link up. He rose and I was born.
Yep.
Don't like to...
Share it over, JC.
I can't compare myself to the JC. I can't walk on water. And unfortunately, I can't turn water into grog. That would be nice. Mm. More importantly, I'd like to be able to turn inanimate objects into KFC drumsticks, but that's an ability I don't obtain. But there you go. 31, I'm getting old.
Yeah.
It's sad, really.
Probably a pizza update for those that listen closely. I tore Domino's a new one last year.
And their CEO, Dom Mays, you basically told Dom Mays to get fucked.
Well, I don't even know who that bloke is.
He's the CEO of...
Yeah,
Domino's, mate. He's on every ad. Hi, I'm Dom Mage.
Yeah, well, I don't watch TV, so... he's not on TV shows I'll watch anyway. I had pizza tonight. I went in there and I ordered a pizza on my way home because it was late. And dinner here was a clusterfuck, but... I roll up there, I ordered one pizza, and then the guy gives me two boxes. I said, what's going on here? He goes, oh, it's two for Tuesday. I said, how good?
I was going to say. I thought you... done yourself out of pizza. I was going to say, you idiot, you should have just left.
No, two pizzas for $15. What a bargain.
Oh, you bloody ripper. The answer is a pineapple. Pizza, two for Tuesday.
Two for Tuesday.
Brock's going to arc it up then spark it up. A lot
better than Domino's.
Oh, double pizzas. They have cheap Tuesday, I think. I don't know. Send an email to Dom Mage. Let him know.
The way they make their pizzas every day should be fucking cheap Tuesday.
You send one to Dom Mage and go, Dom.
He calls them New Yorker pizzas, mate. They're not New Yorker pizzas at all. They're terrible. I've been in New York, I've eaten New Yorker pizzas, and your pizzas stink.
Like I said, you send an email to Dom Mage.
I'm not wasting any time. I'm just telling you.
Dom, if you're out there. It
was just a bit of a pizza update, bit of a pizza connoisseur, I am.
Brock's got beef with you, bruh. Dom, fix your game.
Yeah, charity fight.
The answer is a pineapple.
I'll make him look like a piece of
Domino's meat, are coming up with techniques, manoeuvres to try and maim the stomach.
Jiu-jitsu.
Maim the stomach of people who eat their pizza.
Fucking what a ridiculous comment.
It's
not ageing well.
I just really wanted to use his voice.
Jiu-jitsu moves.
Striking people, even though jiu-jitsu involves no striking.
Anyway.
Domino's are trying to maim Brock's stomach. Pizza Hut to the rescue.
Yeah.
Classic.
Play on.
Well, for everybody out there from the fifth and last NRL podcast, I'd like to say, enjoy your long weekend. Stay safe. Much love to you, your families. Enjoy your rugby league. If you're going to hit the cans, don't drive. It's not a great idea. Just remember double demerit. So if you're going to get a bit tipsy like Buzz, get an Uber or a Lyft. And most importantly... And
if your face gets as red as his, go home.
Oh, yes.
It's time to go.
Most importantly for now, enjoy your week and enjoy your rugby league.
Bring it on. Give us more. Where are you going? What's going on here? Is that it?
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.